childless. A wife and brats would certainly have complicated his unorthodox lifestyle. In his previous career with the federal government, he'd adopted false identities and traveled across the world. Fortunately, changing identities was stunningly easy to do in the computer age. A few clicks of the Dell, a server somewhere in India hummed, and from one's fancy laser printer out popped a new you with all the official bells, whistles, and available credit. Though he still technically labored for the United States, he also worked for himself. His official pension plan fell far short of giving him the quality retirement he felt he deserved after so many years of risking his life for the red, white, and blue. For him, though, it had been mostly red. On the third afternoon after his enlightening visit to the Capitol, Seagraves subtly modified his features and put on several layers of clothing. When it grew dark, he drove a van up into the expensive fringes of Northwest D.C., where the embassies and private mansions all had paranoid guards patrolling their compounds. He parked in a small courtyard across the street from a very exclusive club, housed in an imposing brick Georgian that catered to wealthy and politically obsessed persons. Seagraves wore a blue jumper suit with service stenciled on the back. The key he'd made earlier fit the simple lock of the vacant building that was awaiting extensive renovation. His toolbox in hand, he took the steps two at a time until he reached the top floor and entered a room facing the street. He opened his toolbox and quickly assembled his sniper rifle. Next, he drew up the window a bare 2 inches. He checked his watch and looked up and down the street from his lofty perch without much worry of being spotted, since the building he was in was completely dark. When the limo and lead security car pulled up to the club, he drew his bead on the head of one of the men who got out of the stretch, but he didn't fire. It wasn't time yet. Seagraves checked his watch again. 2 hours to go. He continued to scan the street below as town cars and cabs dropped off serious-faced women, outfitted in smart off-the-rack business suits and tasteful costume jewelry, with their social and political antennae set on high. The serious-faced men accompanying them were hunkered down in pinstripes, bland ties, and what seemed to be bad attitudes. "It won't get any better, gents. Trust me." 120 minutes dragged by, and his gaze had never once left the club's brick facade. Through the large front windows, he could see the efficient swirl of folks who cradled their drinks and murmured in low, conspiratorial tones. Okay, it was time for business. He gave the street another quick scan. Not a soul was looking his way. Over his career, he'd found they never were. Seagraves waited patiently until the target walked through his crosshairs for the last time, then his gloved finger edged to the trigger. He didn't particularly like firing through a window pane, though it wouldn't interfere with the flight of the ordnance he was using. Thwap! This was followed instantly by a tinkle of glass and the heavy thud of a pudgy dead man hitting a highly polished oak floor. The Honorable Robert Bradley had felt no pain at all with the impact. The bullet had killed his brain before it could tell his mouth to start screaming. Not a bad way to go, actually. A minute later, in another part of the city, a fireball raced into the sky. It was the rented and fortunately empty townhouse of the dead man. Initially, it would be blamed on a gas leak that had ignited. Yet, combined with the murder of Bob Bradley, the federal authorities would seek out other explanations, though they wouldn't come easily. The United States government would have to find another Speaker of the House to replace the recently deceased Robert Bob Bradley. That shouldn't be too hard, Seagraves mused as he drove to work the next day, after reading of Bradley's murder in the morning newspaper. He pulled his car to the security gate, displayed his ID badge, and was waved through by the armed guard there who knew him well. He strode through the front door of the sprawling building in Langley, Virginia, passed through additional security gauntlets, and then headed to his 8x10-foot cluttered cookie-cutter office. He was currently a mid-level bureaucrat, whose main work consisted of being a liaison between his agency and the incompetent and brainless on Capitol Hill, who'd somehow been voted into office. It was not nearly as taxing as his old job here, and represented a bone thrown his way for meritorious service. Now, unlike decades ago, the CIA let its special employees come